This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, April 2nd, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. KUAF is supported by Ben Owen Shelter Insurance Agency, providing auto, home, and life insurance. 582-4990 for more information.
KUAF is proud to co-sponsor the 2014 Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. The 5 and 10K race plus 1 mile family walk will take place April 26th at the Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. A pre-race pasta party will be held on Friday, April 25th. Registration, pasta tickets, and more information available at komenozark.org or by calling 750-PINK.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas, speaks with ExxonMobil's Vice President for Pipeline Operations about what's next for the ruptured Pegasus pipeline. Plus, we pay a visit to the new Walmart To Go convenience store in Bentonville.
Also, despite finding white nose syndrome at Blanchard Springs Caverns, the cavern system is still open to the public. We find out what precautions staff members are taking to combat the spread of the disease. Plus, Restaurant Week continues in Rogers and more.
But first, the benefits of Arkansas's investments in higher education are sometimes reaped by other states when graduates leave Arkansas to pursue careers elsewhere. But one program aims to end the brain drain in the state. State Representative Warwick Sabin says that's been a problem in Arkansas.
Companies are concerned about the brain drain that's occurring in Arkansas. Many companies find it difficult to recruit talent to the state and to keep talent in the state, especially in areas that are really the most exciting and promising areas in industry right now, and that includes the tech sector and the startup entrepreneurial sector.
Sabin is considered a leader in Central Arkansas's push for new tech jobs, and he's the executive director of the new Arkansas Fellowship Program. The plan is being implemented for the first time this month to try and combat the brain drain problem. Sabin argues that those taking the fellowships are likely to remain in Arkansas afterward.
By the time the fellowship is over, they have created relationships not only with the CEO of their host company, but also with CEOs of the other host companies, because part of the fellowship program is about networking with the other fellows and the other companies. But part of it is just being established in the community. Many college graduates, after they finish school, where they end up immediately is where they put roots and where they start to build a foundation and network and feeling a sense of community.
Sabin says the program is, in part, based on a similar operation in Indiana, which boasted an 80% rate of fellows staying in the state after the program concluded. The first round of fellowship interviews are being conducted across the state this week, with placement into host companies expected at the end of this month. Sabin says 12 Arkansas companies are currently participating, with the possibility for more by the end of the month.
A merger of two hospital systems that have been in operation more than a century was announced yesterday afternoon. Mercy Hospital in Hot Springs is becoming part of the Little Rock-based St. Vincent Health System. Peter Bango, the president of the system, says St. Vincent has pursued expansions since talks with UAMS faltered last summer.
One of our strategies at St. Vincent is to partner with leading hospitals and physician groups across the state in key markets and build a robust statewide network. And unfortunately, our discussions with UAMS did not lead to that. So we've chosen to partner with other organizations to create that statewide network.
Bango says Mercy merging into the St. Vincent system means a combined $700 million in revenue, more than 4,500 workers, and five campuses in central and southwest Arkansas. He says the merger is part of St. Vincent's goal to build relationships with other healthcare sites to improve services in a competitive field.
The White House yesterday touted that 7.1 million people have signed up for health insurance coverage through the Affordable Care Act. Even though healthcare.gov presented glitches earlier this week for people signing up for insurance coverage, Arkansas Senator John Bozeman says he's more concerned about more detail on enrollment numbers.
How many have started paying and then have quit paying because of concerns about cost? You know, the promise, this thing is not really about the website. It's about, you know, the reality that the law was put in place to help the 30 million that were uninsured and then also to drive down costs for everyone. And I think we've got a, you know, the reality is that I think best case scenario, once you look at the numbers of those that have signed up, we're probably talking about maybe 1 million to 2 million that were uninsured and really significant concrete increased costs for everyone.
Speaking this morning with Jonathan Reeves of KASU in Jonesboro, Senator Bozeman says he has no issue with the overall enrollment numbers reported yesterday. But he says what needs to be known is how many who have signed up for coverage are paying into the system, and how many of those enrolled were previously uninsured.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is issuing a recall today for some products of an Oklahoma-based chicken producer. Advance Pierre Foods of Enid, Oklahoma, is recalling 8,730 pounds of frozen chicken breast products because of misbranding issues. According to the USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service, the chicken products in question were formulated with milk and soy, which are potential allergens that weren't declared on the label. The products subject to the recall are the company's 10-point bulk cases of down-home-style chicken breast fritters for chicken frying that were produced between March 14th and 21st of this year. The recalled chicken was distributed to food service establishments in 15 states, including Arkansas and Oklahoma.
The Razorback baseball team yesterday kicked off a stretch of five games in as many days with a 4-3 victory over Nebraska at Baum Stadium. The win puts Arkansas at 18-10 on the season. And the two teams face each other again this afternoon in Fayetteville.
The Razorback softball team also saw victory yesterday. Arkansas shut out Missouri State 9-0 at Bogle Park in Fayetteville. The team is now 24-14 on the season, and the Razorback softball team returns to conference play this weekend with a three-game road series at Alabama.
Forecast calls for mostly cloudy skies this evening with a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms, with overnight lows from 62 in northwest Arkansas to 65 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Thursday, there's an 80% chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms with highs around 77 degrees. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with a 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms, overnight lows from 43 to 47.
This is Ozarks at Large. 1 year after a major oil spill in Mayflower, the community is on the recovery. Central Arkansas leaders are still concerned with the shutdown pipeline's possible future. And ExxonMobil? Well, it's been hearing from all sides. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas recently sat down with Karen Tyrone, Vice President for Pipeline Operations for ExxonMobil. They discussed what's next for the ruptured Pegasus pipeline, if it could eventually be moved from the Maumelle watershed, and what lessons have been learned by the world's largest public company.
Now you move to a phase where there's going to be a lot of what's called integrity testing of the pipeline. Kind of walk me through a little bit of what happens with integrity testing and how long could that take?
We are getting ready to submit a remedial work plan to PHMSA, the regulatory agency who oversees pipelines in the U.S. That plan is due to them by April 7th, so we will be submitting that plan by that timeline. Before I talk about the remedial work plan, we might want to talk about the investigation, which leads to the response that we'll take. So over the past months, we've worked very hard to determine what happened in this failed section of pipe. I appreciate the patience that people have given us because it's not been a short time frame for this investigation. And what I'd like to tell you and what we can confirm is that we've completed our detailed investigation, and we've confirmed that the factors that resulted in the failure of the pipeline in Mayflower, Arkansas are, one, an original manufacturing defect that was created when the seam pipe was manufactured, combined with extreme metallurgical properties. And let me speak to that a minute. Extreme metallurgical properties can be a lot of things. So when you think about materials in general, not just pipe, they have different characteristics. On one end, if you think about glass, it's very hard, it does not bend. On another end, you might think about rubber that bends, is malleable. Materials are along that spectrum when you think about hardness and toughness. Pipe should be somewhere in the middle. In fact, you may not think about it, but pipe actually bends a little bit. So if you picture a weightlifter with heavy weights on each side and he's lifting that weight, you can actually visualize the bar bending over. That's the property that we would expect pipe to have. When we investigated this joint that failed in Mayflower, the chemical makeup of that joint was different than we have ever seen. We wanted time to investigate that chemical makeup and understand what it meant. PHMSA approved us taking more time to do that, and what we've learned that in fact that pipe has higher quantities of sulfur, manganese, and carbon than we've ever seen in a joint of pipe.
Why do you think that is?
We talked to an industry expert. We took advantage of global experts for ExxonMobil, but in addition to that, we brought in a gentleman named Dr. John Kiefner. He is the foremost expert on pipe integrity, and we talked to him about that very question. What's going on with this joint of pipe? Dr. Kiefner confirmed for us that he has never seen the combination of extreme properties that we observed in this pipe, and he has looked at hundreds of samples of seamed pipe in his work. He's been in pipeline integrity for decades and brings a wealth of experience and knowledge to the table. So when we looked at this pipe and asked ourselves, where did this pipe come from? We looked at the manufacturing process. We know this pipe was manufactured a long time ago. And in that process, we suspect that something in the chemistry was not uniform. It wasn't mixed well. We can only speculate. There are no records that confirm exactly how this joint was made.
That should give you confidence that you've isolated the problem, but maybe a lack of confidence that this could be in other parts of the pipeline, couldn't it?
That's what we had to follow up on. What we did was test not only the joint that failed, but the joints on either side. So we actually excavated and cut out pieces of pipe that adjoined the failed segment. Those segments did not exhibit these properties. Because it might be a natural thought pattern to say if you have one joint here, all the joints along that segment are going to exhibit those same properties. We did not find that. So what we've done is put together a remedial work plan that will address the learnings of the investigation. And what that plan looks like, it's a layered approach. I call it a holistic approach to look at the pipeline integrity, and it combines multiple factors. The first is taking the data from the inline inspection tool that was run prior to the failure, taking that raw data, analyzing it, and addressing any anomaly that is shown in that data. Addressing an anomaly means we'll go to the field, we'll dig up that piece of pipe, we'll do in-the-ditch testing to assess if it's of concern. In addition to that, we're going to be testing for metallurgical properties. So to your point, how will you know if you have another piece of pipe that demonstrates those chemical properties? For every dig that we do to verify the tool run, we're test for those metallurgical properties. That's the first step. After we do all those repairs, we will also address the raw data itself from the tool run. What's important about that is that we use the most advanced algorithms to analyze that data and assess where the pipe could have these original manufacturing defects. I'll tell you that progress has been made in recent times on the ability to analyze that raw data, both in industry and since our event in Mayflower. A lot of focus has been put on it. We have worked with experts on it. Third parties have brought technology to the table, and we believe significant advancements have taken place. So we'll do the repairs, if necessary, for all of those locations. We will conduct a third-party analysis, which is well underway, on the raw data of this tool run. After we complete that, we will also do a hydro test. What's unique about this hydro test that we're proposing in the remedial work plan is that it's called a spike hydro test. So we're actually going to take the pipe up to 1.39 times the maximum operating pressure that we anticipate running. And what that does is it actually stresses the pipe to reveal any weak points. The purpose of a spike hydro test is to reveal and eliminate any of these weak original manufacturing defects that could ultimately be an integrity problem for you.
Safe to assume this is the first type of defect, burst, problem that you've encountered in your tenure that kind of speaks to these characteristics? You've never seen anything like this before, have you?
Correct. We have not seen anything like this, and industry has not seen anything like
this. And that's your reason for precaution?
That is our reason for precaution. I mean, we took months to analyze the data. We wanted to make sure we understood what happened. Part of that analysis was eliminating other potential contributing factors. So during that time, we looked at internal corrosion, external corrosion, we looked at external forces, and were able through metallurgical testing to eliminate any of those potential contributing factors. The testing that we're proposing, the spike hydro test, is PHMSA's recommended approach. We have not done a spike hydro test on this pipeline. It will be testing the pipeline beyond what it's ever been tested before. Once we complete that spike hydro test, we'll back it down to what's considered a normal hydro test, which is more of just a strength test, which is 1.25 times the operating pressure. But the strength test is the normal test. This spike test is what's new and different for this pipeline, which is designed to reveal any flaws, eliminate them, or confirm that none exist there.
How long could all of this testing take place? And I guess to the context of that question, how long could this pipeline remain not in use while you do this testing?
The remedial work plan that we're proposing will take some time to execute. First of all, we've got to do the digs, the testing in the ditch, any repair that is necessary, and then the hydrostatic testing. So we anticipate it will take a minimum of a year.
Mm-hmm. So you've been without the pipeline for a year. You could be without the pipeline for another year while you test. Do you still need this pipeline?
We think the pipeline is a very valuable asset. I think for the country, moving hydrocarbons around is important for our lifestyles that we enjoy, and pipelines are a safe way to do that. The Pegasus pipeline runs from Illinois to southern Texas. It brings crude from a production facility to where the heart of the refineries are. So it's an asset that is key to the infrastructure that we have. It moves hydrocarbons from one place to a place where they can be turned into a usable product. So yes, we anticipate a use for the pipeline and a need for the pipeline.
Obviously a big question for Central Arkansas residents, business leaders, community leaders is there any possibility that this pipeline is moved out of the watershed? Is there any possibility that this pipeline does not get reactivated?
I would hate to speculate on next steps. I think the remedial work plan that we have proposed is thorough, holistic approach. And what I'll tell you is that when we execute that remedial work plan, we will repair, reinforce, or replace the pipe as necessary to ensure the integrity of the pipeline.
You want it to reopen, but the possibility does remain that it may not reopen. If PHMSA doesn't approve your remedial plan, or if the tests prove that it's not up to capability, or do you just replace what needs to be replaced in hopes that you can reopen it?
We won't restart the pipeline without PHMSA approval and without convincing ourselves that we can safely do that.
That was Roby Brock speaking to Karen Tyrone, Vice President for Pipeline Operations for ExxonMobil. You can find more at talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More information at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
KUAF Spring Fundraiser begins this Friday, April 4th, during Morning Edition. Individual supporters of this station help to enlighten our community. You can join the thousands of other KUAF listeners who become members of this station by making a contribution now. Get a jump start on our spring fundraiser and know you've done your part to support your public radio station. You can make your early contribution right now at supportkuaf.com.
Last month, Walmart To Go opened in Bentonville. It's Walmart's first convenience store.
You're really not able to make money selling gas anymore, and that is the core item that convenience stores sell. They make 3 cents a gallon or so. It still make money, but not much money. Cigarettes also, it's a category in decline that also has fairly tight margins. So you're seeing a lot of convenience stores move towards food, move towards fresh, move towards groceries. That's what you're seeing with a new Walmart.
That story's coming up in about 9 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
Here on Ozarks at Large, we have reported numerous times over the last couple of years on white nose syndrome, a fungal disease deadly to bats. The disease has been found in 23 states, including Arkansas. Many caves that the bats call home have been closed to humans to prevent contamination of other bats and caves. Blanchard Springs Caverns is a cave system located in the Ozark Natural Forest in Stone County, just north of Mountain View. Last week, a bat was found dead outside an entrance to Blanchard Springs. That bat was confirmed to have white nose syndrome. Unlike many other caves in Arkansas, Blanchard Springs will remain open to visitors. I spoke with Tony Quinn, the visitor information specialist with the cavern, who says protocols are in place to ensure human, bat, and cave safety.
The first thing that folks will see when they pull up to the cave is two large signs out front explaining what folks can bring in on tour and what they cannot. And primarily what we're looking at are things that can be washed. Clothes, jackets, and things like that get washed fairly often. But things like boots, hats, ball caps, backpacks, purses, things like that generally don't. So we are trying to basically tell folks that those have to be left out in their cars, and things that they can bring into the cave have to be able to fit into a small Ziploc bag. As they come into the cave, the first thing they'll see is people telling them about that. We stand at the front desk and explain what's going on, and we set them up for their tour. And once they come in and see the movie and they'll do their tour, right now we just have the short tour open and the Wild Cave tour by reservation. But they'll do the tour, and once they finish the tour, they come up, and we have what we call our sanitation station, and it is a 10-minute, basically a soak, in a mild Lysol and water solution. And we're hitting the bottoms of their shoes. They'll sit there, and we visit with them about what else we're doing, other tours, what else is happening out in the forest, and after their 10 minutes are up, then they are free to go and do whatever else it was they had in mind to do.
Well, people have to wear shoes.
Yeah, they do. And we've always kind of encouraged people to wear all-in shoes, tennis shoes, you know, hiking boots. But as summer comes on, people are wearing flip-flops and things. For things like flip-flops and cloth shoes, shoes that are made out of material, basically they don't have to have their feet in the shoes. We're just trying to hit the bottoms of the shoes. So folks with flip-flops, you know, they can just sit them right into the shallow tub of water.
Well, chances are pretty good that on a tour, people are not going to come into direct contact with a bat.
So no, but we've got to take every precaution that we can. This is one because some people may be going from our cave to another cave. We'd rather not transmit this out. We've got to do what we can to slow down the spread of the fungus.
Just down the road from where I sit in Fayetteville, we have Devil's Den State Park, and there's a cave there that has been closed for a couple of years. Blanchard Springs is a much different cave than this cave at Devil's Den. So how is it that Blanchard Springs is able to remain open?
Well, all the other caves on the forest are closed. it was decided that our cave, we bring a lot basically into the community, and we wanted to reassure the community and the employees and the public that we're going to try and work hard to do what we can to slow down the spread of the disease. So they had decided that we would stay open, but all the other basically undeveloped caves on the forest would be closed.
And then from what I understand, typically white nose syndrome spreads bat to bat.
Yes, it can. Mm-hmm.
Why is it important to make sure that people are clean and sanitized?
Well, since people also can carry the fungus from cave to cave, and that includes public that's visiting a show cave like Blanchard, but also researchers. So researchers generally, they'll suit all up in Tyvek and things like that, things that they can throw away. Since most of our public, you know, we're not going to suit them up in Tyvek or anything, we still have to do what we can. And that does involve these sanitation measures to just try and make sure that folks do have a chance to at least come see Blanchard.
What is a tour typically like at Blanchard Springs?
It's actually a very pretty tour. It goes down by fairly quickly. We spend an hour on the Driftstone Trail, and when the Discovery Trail is open, an hour and a half. But you are seeing some very nice cave formations, a very highly decorated section of cave on the Driftstone Trail. You're getting a little bit of history, a little bit of geology, but mostly quite a bit of wonder that it's such a gorgeous place is underground and kind of hidden from everything. And we do stress the protection of the cave. You know, we've never allowed folks to bring in food or, say, smoke in the cave or touch anything in the cave. And this way, the cave will stay good-looking, hopefully, for generations to come.
Do you have any idea how many bats call Blanchard Springs home?
Well, we don't count all of them. When we did our last gray bat count, we had 217,000 gray bats using the cave. And then there are four other kinds, tricolored bats, big browns, little browns, and sometimes red bats and Indiana bats.
It's a lot of bats.
I'm sorry?
I said that is a lot of bats.
Yeah, it is. It's not as many as some caves, but it's a pretty good variety of bats.
So I know that I first went to Blanchard Springs as a child, you know, at least, oh, I don't know, over 25 years ago probably.
Okay.
But how long has Blanchard Springs been open to the public? How long has it been around?
Actually, this is our 41st year. We opened up for tours on the Driftstone Trail in 1973, and the Discovery Trail opened up in 1977. And our wild cave tour, which goes into the undeveloped part of the cave, opened in 2000.
And taking precautions like this will just ensure that it will be there for generations to come.
We are interested in showing folks the cave, but also we've got an opportunity for education also. So it's not just, oh, geez, let's come on in and look at a gorgeous cave, which you can do. But we also want to stress the fact that we do have bats and other types of creatures, salamanders, cave crickets, and a few other different types of insects in the cave, that it is important to protect what's on the surface in order to protect what's underground.
Backtracking just a little bit, but you mentioned insects and things. If white nose syndrome were to really, really become rampant inside Blanchard Springs, what would that do to the ecosystem?
Oh, geez. The bats basically bring in a big chunk of the food source for all those little critters down there, since the bats go outside and eat insects and then come into the cave to roost. So their guano, their droppings, actually is part of the food source for some of the smaller creatures in the cave. Without the bats, I've got to think that the other animal life would suffer big time.
And these protocols will be in place until further notice?
Yes. I don't know really if they'll be changed or anything, if we're just going to keep with the same protocol. But, it's not business as usual as it has been. We got a few different things added now.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you for calling.
Toni Quinn is the visitor information specialist with Blanchard Springs Caverns. She says it is perfectly safe for visitors to tour the cave, though she does ask that visitors bear with them as these sanitation matters add a bit of time to trips. For more information, call 870-757-2400. 2211. This is Ozarks at Large.
Walmart, the world's largest retailer, opened its first convenience store March 15th near the home office in Bentonville. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Walmart To Go, the brown brick, lime green accented quick stop, immediately catches your eyes. It stands on the corner of South Walton Boulevard and Southwest 14th Street in Bentonville. A half dozen patrons fill her up with Walmart brand gasoline, a few cents cheaper than the competition. Beneath tilted awnings affixed with a large, iconic yellow starburst. And inside, that Walmart vibe.
You need a bag?
The small but cavernous store features lots of stainless steel and polished concrete. The walls lined with cold-cased dairy, beer, boxed fresh meals, drinks, even fresh produce. Dry goods aisles line the left side. On the right, lots of self-serve, from fresh fruit Greek yogurt smoothies and milkshakes to hot crispy creams with cappuccino. And making the purchase at four centralized registers just takes moments.
Fast and friendly.
That's store manager Kelly Williams.
Peanut butter and jelly and pickles and ketchup and mayonnaise, and we have all the chips in the world you could want. Frozen food, you got frozen vegetables, frozen waffles, frozen toast, french fries, tater tots, ice cream.
And inventory is replenished from Walmart's massive supply chain.
We stocked it from the supercenter, which is about a half mile away.
And what about Walmart's EDLP, everyday low prices?
Absolutely, these are the same prices you have at the supercenter.
Which is counter to most convenience stores. Walmart spokesperson Betsy Harden.
So that's one thing that we knew would be the great thing about this store is providing customers with those low prices and the convenience of this new format.
Harden says lots of executives from the home office just down the street have taken to shopping here.
It's just a few blocks away, so people are coming down to check it out and to get their lunch during the day or to stop and get gas and take home dinner to their families at night.
Betsy Harden says Walmart To Go stocks roughly 3,500 products in this 5,000-square-foot store, compared to supercenters that stock 125,000. But Quick Marts are all about fast food and gas, although you won't find deep-fried chicken and fries fair here. Instead, the in-store Bentonville butcher and deli vendor prepares breakfast, lunch, and dinner to go. Small interior and exterior seating areas are available if you're too hungry to take the food out. And this Walmart To Go prototype aims to slice off a chunk of the prospering convenience store market. Jeff Leonard is spokesperson for the National Association of Convenience Stores based in Alexandria, Virginia.
There are about 151,000 convenience stores in the country. Their cumulative sales in 2012 were about $700 billion.
Traditionally, 70% of convenience store sales could be attributed to motor fuel purchases, 40% on tobacco, 15% on food, 15% on beverages, 10% on snacks. But that's changing, says Jeff Leonard.
You're really not able to make money selling gas anymore, and that is the core item that convenience stores sell. They make 3 cents a gallon or so. It still make money, but not much money. Cigarettes also, it's a category in decline that also has fairly tight margins. So you're seeing a lot of convenience stores move towards food, move towards fresh, move towards groceries. That's what you're seeing with a new Walmart.
But Walmart could have a corner on the growing quick check marketplace simply by girth of its supply chain, Leonard says.
When you strike deals with distributors, they're doing deals based on a case of this or a case of that as opposed to a pallet or a truck. So when Walmart or others are able to knock down those distribution costs, you can dramatically reduce costs and still have a healthy margin.
And Walmart To Go appears to have just one national rival.
When you look at the landscape of convenience stores, there really aren't any national chains besides 7-Eleven. There are an awful lot of regional chains that fit 10, 12 states at most, but one national chain.
And with time feeling ever more compressed, more Americans are patronizing convenience stores.
People want smaller formats. They want faster. They want to buy their time back.
And Walmart aims to capitalize on that under its Next Generation campaign. It has 20 new Walmart Express stores, 350 neighborhood markets, and a dozen Walmarts on campus. Another format is also being tested in Denver, drive-thru pickups for customers who order online. Walmart spokesperson Betsy Harden says no other convenience stores are planned at this time, but the company also said the same thing after opening the first Express and Campus stores in Northwest Arkansas, clearly a convenient proving ground. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
I'm Margaret Juntwaite. Join me this Saturday for one of the most popular and romantic operas of all time, Puccini's La Bohème, broadcast live from the stage of the Met. You'll hear two exciting young stars making their network debuts, soprano Anita Hartig and tenor Vittorio Grigolo, as the seamstress Mimi and the poet Rodolfo, who fall in love in a moonlit garret on a cold Parisian evening. They're joined by Susanna Phillips as the flamboyant Musetta and Massimo Cavalletti as Marcello, her long-suffering flame. Maestro Stefano Ranzani conducts Puccini's beloved score. An intermission will bring you the opera quiz and we'll take you backstage for interviews with the stars. Don't miss this live broadcast of the one and only La Bohème this Saturday on the Toll Brothers Metropolitan Opera International Radio Network.
The opera begins at noon Saturday on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF Night with the Naturals will be Thursday, April 24th at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. KUAF ticket holders will be seated together as the Naturals host the Springfield Cardinals at 7.05 p.m. KUAF tickets are only available at 927-4063, or you can click the banner at KUAF.com to email your order. A portion of ticket sales will benefit your public radio station, KUAF 91.3 FM.
Five events this month will mark Graduate NWA's participation in Financial Aid April. Each of the events is designed to assist adults who have some college credit but no degree finish their coursework to earn a degree. Three of the financial aid workshops will be tonight from 5 to 7. The events will be at Silas Hunt Hall on the University of Arkansas campus, inside the Collegiate Center at Northwest Technical Institute in Springdale, and one on the JBU Rogers campus. The other two workshops will be Sunday, April 27th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Burns Hall on the campus of Northwest Arkansas Community College campus in Bentonville and in the Baldor Technology Center at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. You can learn more at graduatenwa.com.
The Art Club at Northwest Arkansas Community College will host a film screen of Wonder Woman, the untold story of American superheroines, from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. on April 14th. The screening of the 2012 documentary film will be in room 108 of the Becky Penites Student Center on the college's Bentonville campus. The presentation was originally scheduled for early March, but the event was postponed to April because of inclement weather. The event is being held in conjunction with the NWAC Spring Arts Festival and Women's History Month. A panel discussion will follow the screening, and the public is invited to attend. Admission is free, but donations to the art club at NWAC will be accepted.
The Percussion Club and the Music Department at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith have joined forces to present a concert April 15th that will feature the UAFS Percussion Ensemble, along with world-renowned composer and percussionist Nathan Daughtry. A resident of Greensboro, North Carolina, Daughtry is a visiting lecturer of percussion and music composition at High Point University. He has performed and given master classes and clinics throughout the United States and across three continents. He has recorded two solo marimba albums and several chamber music albums. His compositions are regularly performed in concert halls and other performance venues around the world. The concert will begin at 7:30 p.m. inside Breedlove Auditorium on the UAFS campus. Daughtry will also conduct a master class at 5 p.m. April 15th, just prior to the concert. The concert and master class are free and open to the public. For more information, contact Josh Knight at josh.knight@uafs.edu or call him at 479-788-7558.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith Symphonic Band will present an evening of classic symphonic works on April 17th in a concert which highlights new music composers from the 20th and 21st centuries. The 7:30 p.m. event at the Arkansas Best Corp Performing Arts Center at the Fort Smith Convention Center is part of UAFS's Season of Entertainment 33. Admission is by Season 33 season tickets or individual tickets are $6. Tickets are available online at uafs.edu or by calling the box office at 788-7300.
Alpha Omicron Pi will host the annual Strikeout Arthritis Softball Tournament from noon to 3 p.m. Sunday, April 13th at the Gary Hampton Softball Complex in Fayetteville. Registrations for teams is due at 6 p.m. Thursday, April 10th at 712 West Maple Street. The annual tournament benefits juvenile arthritis research. While teams are 10 to 15 people, organizations are welcome to register as many teams as they would like. Every team will be assigned a coach from the organization who will correspond with the team captain and make sure everything runs smoothly. This event is $10 per person with teams of 10 to 15 people. If participants would like a shirt, the cost is an additional $5. For more information, contact Jordan Rose at aoiixophilanthropy@gmail.com.
University Recreation at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville will host the second annual Cesar Chavez Blood Drive from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. tomorrow inside Gym 2 of the Hyper Building on the Fayetteville campus. Anyone can donate, and clubs will earn Razorback points for every person who donates on their club's behalf. For more information, you can contact Shannon at 575-6736.
Every year in early spring, Downtown Rogers invites locals and people from outside the city limits to investigate the bakeries, restaurants, and coffee shops downtown. This year's edition of Downtown Rogers Restaurant Week includes some creative twists. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums has more.
Dana Mather, the events and promotions coordinator with Main Street Rogers, says that organization developed a week dedicated to the city's downtown restaurants in 2012 as a rather simple promotional idea.
We did 2 years where it was just the restaurants offering specials and trying to get the public to come try out a new restaurant downtown.
But this year, the third annual Downtown Rogers Restaurant Week is more than just menu specials, though there are menu specials. This year, there's whimsy and experimentation baked in.
For the third annual event, we thought we'd take it up a notch and have some special events during the week. So I had a great committee of volunteers come up with some ideas, and the first one yesterday was a big hit. The Chef Exchange on April Fool's Day was really fun. Jen Keipel from Heirloom Foods went to the kitchen at the Rail Pizza Company, and Shane from the Rail went over to Heirloom, and I guess Heirloom sold out very quickly of Shane's meatloaf sandwich, and then there were some people that even had lunch at both places. Tried Jen's special pizza over at the Rail, too.
Several of the week's events are cooperative, like yesterday's Chef Swap, indicating there's not just a level of cooperation, but trust between restaurant owners, cooks, and chefs.
Definitely. I think it worked out really well for Jen and Shane because they both kind of share a philosophy, a cooking philosophy, and they are big fans of each other's cooking. And so they had been planning for about 2 months to do this exchange, and I was in Heirloom last week when Shane stopped in, and they were still even discussing menu and recipes and ingredients, the things that they would each need in the other person's kitchen. So they worked pretty closely together to make it a success.
Tonight, another event will bring representatives from several different establishments together, the Ironman Bartender Contest. At least 10 bartenders will be concocting their special drinks for a three-judge panel at Club Frisco. Jennifer Davis, the bar manager at Club Frisco, says the judges are advised to determine a best drink based on basic criteria.
Presentation, how the drink looks, how the drink tastes, and any sort of flair the bartender has that they add to it, whether it is how they mix the drink or how they light something on fire or what have you.
Jennifer says she anticipates the bartenders will stretch out a bit. In other words, don't expect just a creative twist on an old standard. Expect, well, the unexpected.
You know, the classic cocktail craze kind of has happened, I feel like, and people now, especially coming into spring, are looking more for refreshing light flavor, maybe a hint of spice, maybe a hint of lime, maybe, you know, they're not looking at the traditional Manhattans anymore. We have people that are infusing things now with summery things like lavender or mint or rosemary. They're kind of going off of that base.
Since this is the first time Club Frisco has hosted such an event, Jennifer admits even she's a bit curious about what may happen with some of the recipes tonight.
I, of course, am not competing because I don't feel like that would be fair. But we have judges and then spectators. And, of course, the first question from the spectators is, ooh, do we get to taste everything? And like I said, it's our first time, so we're going to see how that works. We might give out tasters. We may, whoever wins, we may put their drink on special for the evening. A lot of bartenders kind of trademark their drinks, so that's up to whoever wins if they would like to share the recipe with us to be able to sell.
One of the three judges tonight is Daniel Hintz. He's been a professional chef, and he's been instrumental in helping the region's culinary scene develop and grow, helping, for example, the city of Bentonville establish a relationship with the James Beard Foundation. He says the spirit behind tonight's bartender event and the entire Downtown Rogers Restaurant Week is indicative of something that has developed in the area over the past few years.
I think what is so compelling about the culinary world, specifically, like I said, in Northwest Arkansas and what's happening, is discovery. That process of discovery, that you're able to participate not only in your own discovery of maybe discovering something new that you thought you knew or an entirely new way of doing things, but you're also participating in the discovery of the person making it. And I think, once again, therein lies that culinary art form, is that it's a sort of sharing of discovery. And that's the part that really excites me, is I'm discovering, but at the same time, I'm participating in the discovery of the person that's making it at the same time.
As for his judging duties tonight, he says he's been a judge in similar events when he's been asked to select a favorite dish. He says that responsibility gets to the core of what a good dining experience should be. Creative, but also involving conversation.
I think walking into it, this is where you rely on the sort of dialogue with the other folks around the table and the other judges. Everyone will sort of bring their own sort of palate and their own sort of profile and biases to a certain degree on what they like. And then so to be able to discuss that and come to a consensus on some of those things will be really important, obviously, because we don't have a specific genre to work with, how they execute, you know, a certain type of ingredient. So how the judges communicate and confab, in my experience, will be really, really important.
Dana Mather, with the sponsoring organization Main Street Rogers, says in just 3 years, the Downtown Rogers Restaurant Week has become an established part of the local scene.
Yeah, it's great. The restaurants enjoy it. I know Heirloom has said it's always the biggest week they have all year. So I think it's doing its job of raising awareness about the different restaurants that are available in Downtown Rogers. We're excited about being able to expand just a little bit outside the core downtown area and go down South First Street and have Ozark Beer Company, and they're going to be having cheese tasting with Kent Walker Artisan Cheeses and beer, and pairing those together. And they have great beer at Ozark Beer Company, and people are really excited about that event as well.
And Daniel Hintz says that's exactly what's developing in Northwest Arkansas, a culinary atmosphere that is being noticed beyond the region.
The development of a culinary scene is not replication. It is putting your own individual stamp on something. And I think that is one of the things that has been so exciting to be a part of the conversation, not just in Bentonville, but of all of Northwest Arkansas. When you see culinary talents, when you see mixologists, folks that are really sort of interpreting and putting out there their versions of these things. And that's what creates a scene. That's what creates that what Memphis is known for. I mean, you have barbecue, but you have multiple ways that people interpret that. And I think that there's that renaissance that's happening in Northwest Arkansas. And this is just one way to highlight that really dynamic scene that's happening all over the region.
The Iron Man Bartender Contest takes place tonight at Club Frisco on Poplar Street in downtown Rogers. And menu specials and other creative takes on food continue throughout the rest of the week. You can see a list of events and participating restaurants at mainstreetrogers.com/restaurant-week. And if you're looking for a spark of creativity at your own bar, Jennifer Davis, the bar manager at Club Frisco, offers some advice on an underrated ingredient.
Sweet vermouth. It's a very traditional that a lot of people shy away from because it's like something our grandparents used, and it goes in Manhattan, and people shy away from it, but it's actually one of those ingredients that goes pretty well if you use it the right way, and it just a little bit goes a long way, and it's something that people don't think about or don't. It usually sits in the back cupboard, you know?
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, HBO's new show, Silicon Valley.
If you want to live here, you've got to deliver, like Steve.
Jobs or Wozniak? Steve Jobs or Steve?
No, I heard you.
Which one?
Jobs.
Jobs was a poser. He didn't even write code.
The cast includes comedian Kumail Nanjiani. We'll talk with him next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The Rotary Clubs of Northwest Arkansas are hosting Everybody Wins, End Polio Now, a carnival-style fundraiser. It's April 5th at 6 p.m. at the Pauline Whitaker Horse Arena in Fayetteville. This casual event includes games, entertainment, refreshments, and music by Ultra Suede. Tickets are available at the door or through Facebook. Search Everybody Wins, End Polio Now.
KUAF is supported by Clubhouse Fitness, located on Dixon Street in Fayetteville, and offering training groups, cycling studios, ergonomic free weights, plus cardio and strength training equipment. Membership information and more are available at clubhausfitness.com or by calling 287-HAUS.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Cane Hill.
And we're going to end today's show with some music by Sean James. Sean James and the Shapeshifters will be performing tonight at Smoke and Barrel, and that will be followed at 10 p.m. by a showing of the U.S. men's soccer team taking on Mexico in an international friendly. The song you're about to hear is called Who Did That to You? It's a cover of a John Legend song used on the Django Unchained movie soundtrack. Sean performed it here inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio early last year. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large.
Until then, have a good Wednesday.
Now if he made you